are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I feel like really similar to Jameson Taillon, who just made his return tonight from something much more serious than me. But regardless, I feel about the same.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I could hit a home run there.
Highly doubtful. I'm pretty sure you can't hit it out of your little girl's ballpark that she plays in.
It depends on if they're pitching or not.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
As soon as I put someone down on our show notes to talk about whether they're hot and cold, it goes the opposite fucking direction by the time we talk about it. Every fucking time. Thank you, Jacob deGrom, for screwing me once again.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 286 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Mike and Matt. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Yes, I feel like really similar to Jameson Taillon, who just made his return tonight from something much more serious than me. But regardless, I feel about the same.
Well, I mean, I think having to work and getting a promotion is very, very serious stuff. I mean, I'm not going to put it
serious.
On the level
not
of
as
cancer.
Not serious as testicular cancer, but yeah.
Well, welcome back, buddy. Matt, how are you?
What a start. I'm good. Just enjoying the draft and trying to analyze as much as I can for people we don't know anything about to this point. And excited for today's guest. I've been a long-time listener of everything he's done and long-time reader of everything he's written, so I'm excited to have him on.
Yes, I'm excited as well, and we're fortunate that it just happened to kind of coincide with the draft, because while this isn't the Prospect Podcast, we're going to talk a little bit of draft news, since today the Major League Baseball Rule 4 draft has started up, and our guest today is Brett Sayer of Baseball Prospectus. Brett, welcome to the show.
Thank you guys for having me.
Definitely. Brett, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself, what you do over at BP and all the other stuff you do, because you do some great stuff over at Dynasty Guru as well.
Thanks. I am the managing editor of Baseball Prospectus, while I do that, I still keep all the fantasy stuff under my purview, so I run our fantasy content as well, along with Mike Ginella, who I know has been a guest of yours in the past, so... He's my rock over there, and we just kind of do what we do. You know, I started the Dynasty Guru a while back. I haven't really been a day to day contributor there for a while, but I still help out with whatever I can with the group of guys that are still going putting out all that content. So it's been a fun and interesting journey from a blog that no one ever read. I don't think anyone even knows existed, to being able to do something I just feel really fortunate to be able to do on a daily basis. So, again, thank you guys for having me. I'm excited to talk some baseball.
Definitely. Well, we're glad to have you on. We should have had you on sooner than we have, but we're glad you're able to join us tonight. You can follow Brett on Twitter at BrettSayerBP. You can follow Mike on Twitter at MikeWarnerFWFB, Matt on Twitter MDTompFWFB, and me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. I finally got our Twitter accounts into the front of the show as opposed to just at the back of the show, because Matt needs some more followers.
Yeah, I do. And you know what's funny about this is I'm just watching baseball as we speak, and the best team in baseball just trusted Matt Albers to get a 4-out save. You can guess how that ended out. Tyler Flowers just hit a 3-run homer. So the Nationals did not close out the Braves because Matt Albers is terrible.
I mean, that begs an interesting question that wasn't going to be something we were going to cover tonight necessarily. But typically teams wait until the trade deadline to make major moves. Do the Nationals need to go out and get a closer now?
They absolutely do. Not now, but they do before the end of the season.
They don't need to do it before the trade deadline, you don't think?
I mean, not necessarily. I mean, they have, what, a 12-game lead over the Mets? I mean, I know I'm exaggerating, but that division's pretty terrible. So there's no urgency, but they need to get somebody because in the playoffs, they don't really have anybody you can really trust to get the big 5-6 outs, you know?
Yeah,
I don't think you're really exaggerating that lead by much. It's not going to be a contest.
Mike, any thoughts on this?
What thought am I going to give other than Matt Adams is just a superstar? That's the only thought I have on
that. I don't want to talk about that.
I'd like to point out the fact that I nailed that one.
I love
Cardinals
it.
Cardinals couldn't score a run in 3 weeks, and then Matt Adams has like 7 home runs since going to Atlanta. So I'm done with that.
It's that short porch.
No, it's SunTrust. Everybody's making SunTrust out to be like Coors Field or something, like, which it's not.
That porch in right field is tiny. I could hit a home run there, and I've had a torn hip and 2 torn shoulders and 2 messed up knees.
Doubtful. I'm pretty sure you can't hit it out of your little girl's ballpark that she plays in.
It depends on if they're pitching or not. All right, let's jump into some topics. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, we have the MLB draft that started this evening. We're not going to go super in depth. I'll leave that to Mike and Matt and Andy whenever they get the prospect pod up and rolling again. But I just want to ask, what is your favorite fantasy or favorite player for fantasy in the draft? I'll start with you, Brett.
It's tough because it's not one of those draft
such
classes
a so bad
that
draft.
Has,
the draft is terrible.
It's not one of those draft classes with a really high end player in it. The number one pick, Royce Lewis, is an interesting guy from a tools perspective, but he's more sort of in the Mickey Moniak mold than in the much more in the Moniak mold than in the Bryce Harper mold, in that, you know, he's just a really good prep player who probably in a much more interesting year would have been, you know, top 5, top 10 talent in class. So while he's got the potential to be, you know, a 5 tool guy, maybe not quite on the power, it's tough to make him the top guy. The guy who I really like in this class, and he went to a really nice spot, which is something I think we're going to talk about a lot. It's a good fantasy draft. Is Keston Hiura of the Brewers now. He can just hit the shit out of the ball, and it doesn't matter where he ends up defensively. He'll end up somewhere. He's sort of like I feel like he's like what people think Ian Happ is going to be. But, you know, the really optimistic Ian Happ believers, of which I still consider myself to be one. But he can stick at second base. I do think he can stick at second base, and he's got the potential for plus hit and plus power down the road. He's a college hitter. He should move reasonably quickly, assuming he's healthy. And Miller Park is gonna be very nice for him. So he's probably my favorite overall player in the draft.
Matt, who's your favorite player for fantasy in the draft?
I'm going to go off the board a little bit. I'm going to go with college. Adam Haseley, outfielder. He ended up with the Phillies. I think he's the most exciting college player in this draft. I know everyone probably expects me to say McKay or something like that, but I'm going to go Haseley just because I think he's the type of player that's good at everything but not great at anything, so I think he's going to be kind of underrated a little bit. And his power-speed combination with the hit tool. And, I mean, the dude walked 44 times while striking out only 21 times in the best conference in college baseball, in the ACC. And, obviously, he's an outfielder. Well, like I said, the power-speed combo. I think he's an Adam Eaton with more power. And I think that's an incredibly valuable fantasy asset. So I'm going Adam Haseley.
Mike, I know you and I could probably argue over who loves this guy more. But
that's why I left him for you guys. Yeah, I left him.
Who's your guy?
Oh, it's definitely Jordan Adele, and I know for a fact you and I are the same on it, but Yeah, I always look for upside. I always like prep bats higher than college bats. And it's pretty much the same with pitching as well. If you want to go safer and more conservative, you can certainly look at, you know, college pitchers and hitters for that matter. But Adele is definitely my guy here. He's the one that if I was doing a, you know, startup draft right now for this class alone, he would definitely be the guy I would roll the dice on, just because, you know, you look for the highest upside, and in my opinion, he has the highest fantasy upside of the group. He doesn't have a great hit tool yet, and that's stuff that will come over the next few years, and he likely will never be a 300 hitter or anything like that, but I do think in terms of home runs and stolen base, power, speed mix, he has the highest upside of the group, and it's him by a landslide for me.
Yeah, Matt alerted us while we were kind of BSing before the start of the podcast that Cespedes Family Barbecue tweeted out his high school numbers. It's /.. 562, 667, 1437 with 25 home runs and 21 stolen bases in 35 games.
That's what was that last number? OPS, was that a slug?
Yeah, it was. It's a 2,000 OPS if you're scoring at home. That's crazy.
So, I mean, obviously he's not like going to come anywhere close to those numbers, but I mean, he's got the highest ceiling, the best combination of power and speed. He swings and misses a little bit too much, but in this day and age in fantasy baseball and in Major League Baseball, that isn't as big of a deal as it used to be. In spite of the fact that I think he went maybe a couple picks later than I personally thought he would, and I think a lot of other people thought he would, he ends up as probably now the crown jewel of a putrid Los Angeles Angels system, which means they're going to take really good care of him and do their best to develop him properly, because they need someone in that organization that is going to offer them some upside and actually, you know, give them some reward at some point in the near future. So, Yeah, I love Jordan Adele. All right, let's move on and talk about kind of our list of major league players now that we got some prospect talk out of the way. And Ulesky Gurriel, I put him on the list, one, because he is having a nice little hot start going on right now, and two, Brett, I know by listening to your podcast, the Flags Fly Forever podcast, you were a big fan of Gurriel coming into the season. He struggled early on, but seemingly is turning things around. What are your thoughts on Ulesky Gurriel for the rest of the season?
I think he's sort of building into the player that I thought he was going to be coming into the year. I mean, he doesn't strike out. We knew that coming in. He's got 26 strikeouts and 213 plate appearances. He doesn't really walk either. So obviously in OBP league, he takes a bit of a hit. But, you know, the power has been there a little bit more than I anticipated. You know, I kind of, even with the short porch in Houston, I thought he might kind of top out as sort of a 150 isolated power guy. And he's right now at about 175 or 170, 175. He's got 7 home runs. He's hitting a bunch of doubles. I think the 20 home run power is sort of the upside for him, but we're seeing glimpses of why he is someone who could hit 300 in the majors. And, you know, as the adjustments happen, I think they'll favor Gurriel, and I think he'll be able to get sort of closer to that, you know, 300 and, you know, 15 to 20 home run fate, which should make him a top 10. It's sort of a borderline top 10 third baseman, but no, I still definitely believe in his talent. You know, it's just as I keep saying, it's a shame that we had to wait this long to see him in the majors, because if we had seen him in the majors at 25, I mean, we would think of him in the same way. I think we think of Jose Abreu and Yoenis Cespedes and guys who really came to MLB and became stars. He just happens to be 33 years old now when he's come over. So even though we're seeing the twilight of his career, it can still be plenty productive from a fantasy perspective.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Ulesky Gurriel?
I think he's the kind of guy that you have on your fantasy team, and he's unheralded, but he's just a guy that's a rock for you. And he's the epitome of an average bat for me in the major leagues. And that's including his slow start. I think he's also made a little better than that. But even like Brett touched on, even with his kind of disastrous start, he's 276, 310, 442, which I kind of think is exactly what we had pegged for him in the long run. So going forward, I think he's going to be a little tick better than that. He's the kind of guy who in fantasy circles is labeled as boring because he lacks the upside. But as a 33-year-old bat like this, he's definitely solid, and people are sleeping on him a lot. As a first baseman with, like Brett said, 15 to 20 home run power and can hit around 300, I mean, there's a lot of value with that. And he's a nice guy to have around. He's got third base eligibility now. That's obviously going to disappear next year. But Gurriel's a nice little player, and I think a lot of people slept on him this year, including myself. Obviously, like I said, the upside isn't sky high, and he's kind of fending off AJ Reed more than we thought. I mean, I was a big AJ Reed believer, obviously that's not gone by the wayside, but that's been a little bit dampened by his lack of production and Gurriel's just steady, solid hand. So I like Gurriel.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Gurriel?
In on-base percentage leagues, he's below average. In power, at a corner position, he's below average, and he had a hot streak and is now, you know, sitting somewhere in the vicinity or going to be projected for the rest of the year to have like 60 runs scored and 60 RBIs. I think he's just like average to below average, and he's fine, I guess. Like I think that the plate skills are good enough that he can hit 280, 290. And, you know, if that's what you're looking for is a batting average asset, then from a corner position, then I'm fine with that. It's just not my style. My style at corner is to usually have a guy that can have more power. And he just doesn't fit that profile for me. Doesn't mean I think that he's a bad player or anything like that, but he doesn't make hard enough contact for me to project out more than 20 home runs. And just based on, I think he, just being in the Houston lineup is really helping him out. And for that, that's awesome. But I think that he's below average player, and I'm not really that excited.
Yeah. I'm probably closer to Mike's camp than I am to Brett's or Matt's. He's just not a guy that fits into my typical draft strategy. And so I overlooked him in that regard. I mean, he's a decent little player. I think he's great especially as a bench option. Considering in the majority of formats, I believe he has third base eligibility still, so he can fill in at either corner position. And I did pick him up in a league somewhere where I lost a couple different third base options, and so I'm able to kind of throw him in there and at least tread some water at the position. But for the most part, I prefer a guy who's got a little bit more power or in elite category somewhere, and it's just not there for Gurriel. I do kind of wish that we got to see him when he was a little bit younger, like Brett said, because that would have been interesting to see what kind of player he would have been in his mid-20s. But at this point in his career, he's probably not a guy that I'm going to roster very often. Let's talk about Jacob deGrom, who has been struggling fairly mightily this season, except for, of course, when I put him on the show notes. And he goes out tonight and throws a complete game five-hitter. The only run he gave up was a solo shot, six strikeouts. Matt, I'll start with you. Is this the sign that Jacob deGrom has turned it around, or is there still reasons to be worried?
I sure hope so, man. I kind of went into the strategy this year as DeGrom as my number two starting pitcher that I was targeting. I paired him with Corey Kluber in a Yahoo league, and I was expecting that to be a pretty solid staff for me. And DeGrom's let me down a little bit there. He's still getting the strikeouts, which is nice, and he's staying on the field every day, which in that Mets rotation is incredibly tough to do. And Kluber hasn't, which has kind of been shocking to me, but. DeGrom is a guy, I think he's going to be better. He's been bitten by the home run. 1.5 homers per nine is absurd for him. The walk rate is a career high in any level, any major leagues or minor leagues, at 3.75 per nine. He's giving up more fly balls than ever, 43% ground ball rate compared to years past. And he's getting a little snake bitten by the home run per fly ball ratio, which is up over 20% right now, which is kind of absurd. I do think things will level out for him. You have to be a little disappointed in what you've seen. Velocity's up across the board for him, which is also a good thing considering the adjustments have to make for pitch FX, he's still well above those marks. And you know, he's always got the injury risk around him, and being a Mets pitcher, you know, any plan the Mets have is bound to be spoiled in a week or two because it doesn't work out for them. But I like DeGrom. I think he's a guy I'm going out to acquire right now, to be honest with you, because I think the best is yet to come for him this season.
Unfortunately, I think you may have actually just missed your opportunity after tonight. But Brett, what are your thoughts on Jacob DeGrom?
Yeah, obviously there's the injury cloud that kind of hovers over everybody on the Mets, whether you're a pitcher or not these days. But you know, DeGrom's strikeout rate has been climbing. He's got, you know, for all the talk of his struggles, I mean, he had in 2014 and 2015, he had 2.76 DRA and 2.65 DRA. He's got a 3.05 DRA this year, and that's not updated in real time, so that's probably going to drop to below 3 by the time the stats refresh in the morning. So in a way, he's kind of been the same guy. And yeah, I don't see any reason to expect when he's healthy to be anything less than the SP1 that I think most of us were expecting coming into the year.
Mike, are you still in on Jacob DeGrom?
Yeah, I don't think that there's any window to buy low. I tried the last couple of weeks here to buy somewhat, not last couple of weeks, but over the last couple of starts, and it really, I didn't get any type of nibbles on that. His one blow up against Milwaukee was the second time against them this year already, and Milwaukee's lineup is great, so I don't really hold that against them. And you know, some people have bad starts once in a while, and you know, he ended up getting lit up by Texas, but for the most part, I mean, he's third in swinging strike rate in the whole entire league at 16%. Well, it was 16%. It might be a little bit lower now, but he's had 14 or more swing strikes in a game in 9 of his last 11 starts overall. The walk rate, I think, will come down a little bit since his first pitch strike rate has remained consistent over the last few years here. He still has a pretty decent ground ball tilt. He's getting a little bit unlucky in BABIP. I mean, just across the board, it looks like things will regress positively for him. Baseball HQ uses expected ERA, kind of similar to, you know, DRA or XFIP, anything like that, and he's at 3.41 prior to the start tonight, so he probably will be around 3 in there as well. So overall, I think that he's going to end up being a top 15 starter in mixed formats when it's all said and done, and that's pretty much what you bought him for.
Yeah, brighter nights game, 3.24 XFIP. His swing strike rate has gone up this year. You know, he's getting a few more swings and misses outside of the zone. I did, like Matt mentioned, his velocity is up. He's getting a little bit of BABIP bad luck. He's got a 350 BABIP coming into tonight, so maybe that comes down a little bit. I think he's going to be fine. I think this start we just saw tonight is indicative of that, and unfortunately, he did it right. You know, just like I say all the time, as soon as I put someone down on our show notes to talk about whether they're hot and cold, it goes the opposite fucking direction. By the time
literally never fails,
like it, every fucking time. So thank you, Jacob DeGrom, for screwing me once again. let's move on, and we'll talk about Lewis Brinson, who is a top prospect, has been called up. Batted leadoff in his first game at the major league level. Matt, what are your thoughts on Lewis Brinson?
I love this kid, man. Coming into his call up, he was my second fantasy prospect still in the minor leagues. That's how bullish I am on this kid. And that's a good spot to be, not to go on a tangent, but I had Moncada was second underneath Benintendi, and then I had Bellinger second. He got promoted, and now Brinson. The thing with Brinson is obviously the story is the strikeout. So he's cut that rate from a low watermark of 38%. And this year in AAA, he's at 22%, which is extremely usable. And then when you pair his 10% walk rate to go with that, yes, it's an extremely hitter favorable environment out there in Colorado Springs. But I mean, a 10.8% walk rate with a 22% strikeout rate is going to play any time. So that's very, very encouraging to see. I like to use this comp, and I don't use this comp as a straight player comp because there's no such thing, but he's got Mike Trout tools. He's not Mike Trout, but he's got Mike Trout tools.
Then why say the name?
Yeah, basically, right? But basically what I'm saying, tools alone, he's got the most upside of anyone in the minor leagues. And I'm excited to see him up. He's playing left field every day now, it looks like, for Milwaukee, and he's gonna lead off, which is a really nice ballpark to be the leadoff guy in.
Does he stay up after Travis Shaw is reinstated from the paternity list and Ryan Braun is back from injury?
After Braun comes back, I don't know, because Santana's been productive and Keon Broxton's been hitting. So after Braun comes back, he might go down after that. He shouldn't, because I think he's ready. But he might go down because, I mean, Brett Phillips is still up too. Phillips might go back down when all that time comes. But I really, really love Brinson. And I know we all do here, obviously. But I'm excited to see him called up. And I think he's a must-add in all formats because the upside is sky high.
Brett, what are your thoughts on Lewis Brinson?
I like him a lot. I don't think I'm quite that high on him, partially because not for sort of the expected reason. I think his plate discipline improvement is real. And, while I do think he probably will take a little bit of time to adjust to the majors, I think he can get to the point where he's not striking out too much and he's getting on base at a fair clip. So the bigger issue with him being sort of a fantasy superstar is that he's really not that great of a base stealer. He's never really been a prolific base stealer. He's never stolen more than 24 bases in a season in the minors. And even at that, he's been a pretty poor percentage base stealer. Even just this year, he stole 7 bases, was caught 5 times in AAA. The Brewers like to run, and it may end up not mattering anyway, because if they're not contending and they'll just let him run, he could rack up 20 to 30 steals regardless. But I have a little concern that he might just be sort of a 15 steal guy in the majors. And, there's still plenty of upside to be had with Brinson at 15 steals, because the power is legit. And I think, while the average is never going to be incredible, I think he could hit upwards of, 270, 275 eventually. I don't see sort of first round upside eventually with him. But it is a really exciting package of tools, and I definitely agree that he's worth rostering in any league, just because as we see with a lot of these young players, it's tough to predict which ones will sort of have that first wave of success. Brinson certainly has the pedigree to do so.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Brinson?
Yeah, so I usually have a handful of prospects that either prior to the season starting or at the very beginning, I'm willing to take a shot on in 12-team leagues or fewer. And, Brinson's one of those guys. My problem is I really hate that's why we have the prospect show, because we can gloat over Brinson all over there. But, like, for season long, it's really hard for me to give a vote of confidence for somebody that still hasn't really, added the weight onto his frame. It says 195 on his Fangraphs page, but based on watching him, I still think that he's like 175. That's just the way he looks. He's very lanky, and I don't think that the power is going to be, even though we'll be playing in Milwaukee, I don't think the power is going to be good enough to start on a 12-team league consistently. Again, I think that it's worth taking a shot in shallower formats, especially if he's going to lead off for the Brewers, who were first or second in stolen base attempts last year. Right now they're third. If they give him the opportunity to steal bases and they don't care about how often he gets caught, then he certainly can steal 20 bases this year. The batting average is certainly going to be a question mark, and so is the power. But I'm definitely willing to take that risk. With that said, I think that there is a better chance than not that you're going to end up dropping him sometime soon, whether it be because someone else gets called back up or gets off the disabled list, or because he doesn't perform well enough. I just don't see him sticking in the major leagues the rest of this season. Again, that's not to tarnish my long-term outlook on him, which is that of a first-round fantasy player, because I love him that much.
Yeah, I tend to lean with you, Mike, in that regard. First, I want to say or kind of correct you that the Brewers were by far the team that stole the most bases last year. They were 42 more than the second place team in the Reds with 181 last year, stolen bases last year. This year, like you mentioned, they're tied for third in stolen bases. So I think they're going to move on the base paths, and I think they're going to let Brinson do that. He's already got a stolen base since getting called up. I just worry that he's getting sent back down once Braun is healthy. And there was a report yesterday that Braun is nearing a rehab assignment. Travis Shaw will be back in a day or two off the paternity list. I wonder. I mean, he could theoretically get sent back down once Shaw is reactivated. I don't necessarily know that that happens, but I don't think he stays up with Braun gets brought back up because they want Braun to play every day because they want to move him. Now, after, you know, the end of July, you could see Brinson return and be in an everyday role, and that can make him interesting. But in this day and age, or at least in this season, when we're dealing with so many injuries, can you really afford to stash Lewis Brinson? You know, because most of us are stashing, whether it's Starling Marte because of his suspension or a number of injured guys, you know, because most leagues didn't account for the fact that every player in the world would get injured left and right this season, and we don't have a million DL slots. So, I mean, more than likely, most people are stashing at least one DL guy already on the reserve list. So I just don't know if it's feasible to hold on to Brinson in the long term. So he's not a guy I'm necessarily going out and spending a ton of fab on because I just don't believe the role is concrete, probably till after the trade deadline.
I'll take the other side of that argument, though. I think that was sort of the argument that I made for Brett Phillips when he got called up because, you know, Phillips is a good prospect in his own right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when he got called up, my first thought was, you know, if they're going to bring someone up in the outfield, you know, if they're going to bring someone up for a couple of days, they'll bring up Phillips. If they're going to bring up someone for a couple of months, they'll bring up Brinson. You know, I don't think they take lightly that Brinson is their best offensive prospect. And yeah, Braun might come back in the next 2 weeks. But, I mean, Keon Broxton's not irreplaceable. So I would not be surprised at all if Brinson does perform reasonably well, if the Brewers just decide to go with Brinson for the rest of the season and kind of, I don't know, maybe they, Broxton, his on-base percentage is below 300. He's interesting from a fantasy standpoint, but he's really just not a very good offensive player. He's still leading the majors in strikeouts. There is definitely the opportunity for Brinson to play his way into a full season of at-bats from here. So I'd be a little bit more optimistic about his playing time than I think you are.
And I think that's fair. I mean, I think especially with the injury to VR and, you know, maybe Nick Franklin gets a little bit more infield work than he would have in the outfield. Maybe they decide that they need to have more outfielders on the roster even when Braun comes back. So I definitely could see a scenario. I'm not willing to bet on it if I've got to go out and, you know, spend a bunch of fab. You know, if it's a waiver wire situation where you can just pick them up off of waivers, or, you know, use a waiver priority type thing, or I can, you know, get them somewhat cheaply in fab. I just don't know. I'd be willing to go out and spend 25% of my remaining fab in a mixed format in order to go get him. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Gerrit Cole. And coming into last season, Mike shit all over Gerrit Cole and all the love. And this year, he did a complete 180, and he was all like, Gerrit Cole's my man this year because he is so much cheaper than he should be. And so far, Gerrit Cole has proceeded to shit all over Mike.
So, yeah, we have a real bad relationship. We just keep hurting each other over and over. It's never ending.
Hate relationship. Yeah.
So Mike, what's wrong with Gerrit Cole?
What's wrong with Gerrit Cole is really since last year, he has had a lot of trouble getting lefties out. And even particularly this season, he's allowed 10 home runs in 170 plate appearances to lefties. That's a problem. And it's all coming off of his fastball and his curve. The fastball and curveball are allowing the most home runs to lefties at this point. And you know, overall, I want to say that things are going to correct itself, but I'm not, you know, I'm not 100% positive at this point. His first pitch strike rate is up, which means he's getting ahead more. His walks are, you know, right in line at two walks per nine, and his swinging strike rate is right in line as well at right up 10% or so. His velocity is good. His ground ball rate is solid and consistent with what he's done in his, you know, prior performance. I really feel like things should regress to a, you know, more like a 3.5 ERA, but even that under, you know, expected ERA doesn't mimic what he's done to this point. So I'm buying overall for the rest of the year, because I do think that he's going to give up less home runs as we go through the season. And, you know, I think part of it with Cole is everybody has this idea in their mind that he was a top 10 starter, because that's what he was a couple of years ago, prior to the injuries last season in 2016. But even then, it wasn't as glamorous as people thought. It was just the first time that he threw 200 innings, which is why all the surface stats look so great. If we can get another 170 to 180 innings this year, I think we'll see a little bit of a down line from what he did in 2015, but it shouldn't be so bad that everybody should have like a tarnished view of Cole. I think it's just overall he was looked at much in a much better light than he should have been from the get-go, and we should have been a little bit more reasonable, you know, going here on out. So I think that he's going to be a top 40-ish starter the rest of the way, which is obviously a lot worse than I projected prior to the season starting. But, you know, that's kind of on me too. I think just Gerrit Cole's name itself is, you know, just a little bit higher than we should be alone. And, you know, I think that we should have just a little bit more sober outlook on him.
Brett, what are your thoughts on Gerrit Cole?
I still like Gerrit Cole as sort of a top 25-ish starter going forward. I think the home runs are fluky in a sense, and I think he'll figure it out. But you know, that's an important point that you touched on, and I think part of the problem is that it certainly seems like lefties are seeing the ball way too well out of his hand, and it's not something that's not fixable. It's just something that he's going to have to make an adjustment in order to fix. And the problem with those is that, you know, he could go out in his next start and make that adjustment and be fine the rest of the year, because, you know, Cole in 2017 with his normal home run rate is still, you know, probably a top 30 starter. And, when he fixes that is the bigger issue. I do think that will sort of fix itself, and you know, the strikeouts will be there. Pittsburgh is still a really nice place to pitch, but yeah, it's been a frustrating last 5 weeks or so. But I mean, I just traded for him in a dynasty league about a week ago. And while I'd love to see him go out there and turn things around tomorrow, I'm still very happy with his outlook long term. So not super concerned, at least from that perspective.
What did you trade to get him? I'm interested.
Essentially, Evan Longoria.
Oh wow. Okay. I mean,
I traded Longoria for Cole and a couple of prospects. Alex Jackson and I'm not gonna remember the other one.
I already love the deal for you. It doesn't even matter even if it was nothing. I think that's a really good deal.
And now it's gonna bother me. But
Alex Jackson are always entertaining too.
This, but I am going to now look, because I will not be able to focus if I don't remember who this is.
All right. Well, Brett looks that up. Matt, what are your thoughts on Gerrit Cole?
I like Gerrit Cole, probably not as much as Brett and maybe not even Mike, but I do want to touch on over his last 19 and a third innings, which is his last four starts, I believe, 23 earned runs, 4.11 batting average against, and a 4.37 BABIP. So, yeah, that's high. I mean, there's multiple reasons why the BABIP could be so high. Lefties are torching him. He's giving up a 299 batting average to lefties as opposed to a 255 against righties. And the 255 against righties has been pretty constant for 3 years. 251, 253, and 255. In the past against lefties, he's been 227 in his lights out 2015 year. 329 last year and 299 this year. And the home runs obviously spiked, but I kind of think it's just a little bump in the road with Gerrit Cole, and it's one that's is definitely frustrating because the true talent level is there, but he's definitely a guy like if you can kind of pull off a deal like Brett did. I like that trade for Brett too. If you can do something like that, I mean that'd be great. Longoria for Gerrit Cole, I would take Gerrit Cole all day. So hopefully, maybe there's a slight window to acquire him. But if you have him, I'm holding him now. He's frustrating just in the sense that you know he's better than this, and with all the injuries you're dealing with and stuff, the last thing you can afford for your staff is an underachieving Gerrit Cole. Yes, you didn't pay probably the price you should have paid for him, but you still don't want him to pitch like he's doing. Obviously, right now he's not helping you at all. So hopefully the righty can get it straightened out. Maybe it's some off the field trade rumors, maybe bothering him and all that stuff because Pittsburgh's going nowhere fast. That could be an option. He could get moved. I doubt it, but it's on the table. So
I doubt he gets moved. I mean, they have team control.
I'm with you, but could happen.
I believe if I'm remembering correctly. I mean, here's the thing for me. I think he's hurt. I mean, that to me is we knew there were health concerns coming into the season, and if you look at his pitch values. Over on FanGraphs in 2015, when he was having his quote unquote breakout, he had a plus 24.2 value on his fastball. Last year it was almost one in a year where he was dealing with injuries. This year it's negative 9.5. The movement on the fastball isn't the same right now. It's getting beat around. I think there's something wrong. Personally, I think there's something physically wrong. I think we're ignoring the fact that there was some serious injuries concerns coming into the year, and I know there are guys that talk about Saris over at FanGraphs talks about this all the time is that pitchers are literally like always hurt. There's always something wrong with a pitcher. It's just a matter of the severity of it in season, and I think there's something physically wrong with Gerrit Cole right now and. It hurts me because I was probably highest on him from our site last year, going into last year, and I think I was right around where Mike was coming into this year. And so I've been a big fan of his the last couple years, but I would be trying to get away from any Gerrit Cole shares personally.
What was that? Oh, I figured out the guy. It was Matt Manning, but.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I like that. That's
a good deal.
Yeah, I like that deal.
Thanks. The one thing I will say that some of this is anecdotal, but generally when you see a guy who you think might be hurt, one of the telltale signs of his repertoire is that he'll start going to his main breaking pitch less, especially if it's a slider. Cole's actually ticked up his slider usage over the last couple of weeks as he's gotten worse. So not that should necessarily be a game changer either way, but if he is hurt, then I would expect that to go in the opposite direction, not the direction it's going in.
And I think that's fair. I just worry that this is a guy that we've been worrying about for the last year and a half in terms of injury issues, and the fastball just doesn't seem right. And it may just be a matter of something's going on outside. Mike mentioned the fact that maybe he's a little bit in his own head, I don't know. To me, I just worry that he's hurt, and I just don't see any improvement, and I'm willing to bail a little bit right now. But I understand people wanting to buy in because right now I think most owners are feeling like I am.
Would you trade for him right now? Because there's a guy in our Friends of Fendi Benefits like Facebook chat, Ben Brennis was talking about trade offers where he was receiving Gerrit Cole. I kind of steered him away from that. I don't know if I would potentially be buying him right now. Is that something you're scared off from, Justin, or would you be?
Yeah, like in a dynasty format? Because, I mean, dynasty.
No, I think it was redraft for this year. I don't think it was dynasty. I could be wrong, though.
I mean, if the price is cheap enough, I'll purchase anybody. I mean, to me, I'm all about asset acquisition. And even if there's a guy that I dislike, or you know, if the price is cheap enough, I'm willing to buy someone because I can always feel like maybe, you know, in a few weeks I can flip them for something a little bit more than I just got them for. Sure. So I mean I remember seeing what Bennett, the trade offer that Bennett asked in that staff chat. But honestly, I can't remember it because he throws like 40 or 50 trade proposals into that chat on a daily basis. Ben like literally has a trade addiction. Like he is like, he's one of those guys that I don't like playing in leagues with him anymore because I get like 30 trade offers a day.
Yes, there is a sure thing is too many trades. So that's for sure.
You know who Gerrit Cole is this year? Michael Pineda from 2016. That's what he is.
I could see it.
So, I'd have to look at Pineda's numbers.
He's been terrible on the road too, Gerrit Cole. That's worth noting. He has been
better at home, which you know plays into the home run thing. But if you take out this last start against Miami, the three starts prior, he gave up 8 home runs in a total of 14 innings.
Holy cow!
So I mean, that's inflating his numbers.
Yeah, definitely.
Which you know, going into, I don't want to like go too far into something that we don't know, but like if you look at maybe the start against Atlanta on May 22nd where he gave up 2 home runs right after he had back-to-back starts against the Mets where he gave up 3 home runs apiece and he didn't get out of the 5th inning, you know, maybe he did something in that Atlanta game in terms of injury wise that kind of went that way, but you know, it's hard to tell. In Brett's word, it's anecdotal and I have no idea.
All right, let's move on to Delino DeShields, who is quietly putting up a really, really nice season. So far this year, through tonight's game, he is hitting 333, 500, 333, one home run, and 14 stolen base in 17 attempts. Brett, are you a believer in DeShields, and does he keep a full-time role once Carlos Gomez is back?
I'm not a big believer in DeShields, and I don't buy him as sort of an everyday player on a team that fancies itself a contender. But you know, for fantasy this year, I think he'll get enough playing time that he'll be fine. He swings and misses and hits the ball in the air a little too much for a player of his type. You know, he should be putting the ball on the ground more often, using his speed. You know, he's also, we talked about Brinson not being the world's greatest base runner. Delino Shields is a terrible base runner. he's got 46 stolen bases, but he's not a terrible base runner, but he's not a very high efficiency guy. I don't see where the playing time is going to come from. I think with Beltre back, I think Gallo is going to eventually get some time in the outfield. Gomez is going to come back. I see him sort of as a 3 to 4 day a week starter, and that it will probably be good enough to get him, you know, close to 30 steals this year, but I wouldn't expect this pace to continue.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Delino DeShields?
I'll keep this short and sweet. I hate the player, but he's top 10-ish in stolen bases, and regardless of whether he plays full time, he's going to bat first when he does play. And I think that will net him around 30 stolen bases when it's all said and done, even possibly more if he gets playing time. So I think he's better and more suited for deep leagues. But if you need stolen bases in a 12-team league, at least until Carlos Gomez returns, why not? I mean, he's not going to be stellar in other areas, but stolen bases are really, really down. They continue to be down. And I feel like if you're going to get a guy that can steal 30 bases for pretty much nothing, why not?
I mean, is he really going to bat first? I mean, he's batted last. Yeah,
has been all year.
I mean, well, he's got 59 at bats in 8th and 9th slot and 79 in first. So, I mean, it's almost a 60-40 split.
Looks like, well, he leads off against lefties and hits in the bottom against righties. But point still stands. I mean, he's still getting the ability to run wild and the ability to if he gets on base, he's pretty much going to try to take second base at least. And negative stolen bases don't really hurt. So
he's got 45 at bats against lefties, which I'm assuming was in the first spot thus far. So if you say 4 months more of the season, you know what, 120-ish. I'm not great at, you know, quick math like this, but 120 more at bats from the left-hand side batting first. That's not terrible the rest of the way.
Okay. Matt, what are your thoughts?
I like him. I'm kind of in the same thing as Brett and Mike here. I think he's just kind of a guy, and he's a guy. He's a way better fantasy asset because of the steals. He doesn't offer you anything else. I think if I'm really looking for a player of this type, I'd rather spend my money on somebody like Malik Smith, who's better at the one skill that the Shields possesses, and I think he can help you more, and he's going to play every day with Kiermaier out in Tampa. But not to turn that on Malik Smith talk, but I think the Shields is who he is, and he's a guy who offers you value. For the price, the best thing about the Shields is the price preseason. You pay nothing for him, and he's chipped in 13 steals, going to give you more. He's getting on base at a 350 clip in Texas, which is pretty nice. Decent lineup out there, especially with Beltre back. So kind of ride what you have here. But if I'm making a long-term investment, I'm definitely going Malik Smith over to Shields.
Yeah, I think I agree with you in terms of Malik Smith over to Shields. I mean, one of the things, when everybody was going kind of crazy on him last year, I think people were looking at the potential role in the speed profile and really projecting out. And I think DeShields is one of the examples, at least in 2016, of drafting skills over roles. And Delino DeShields is a fourth outfielder at the major league level. I don't think he profiles well as an everyday player. He's got platoon issues, doesn't have really any power to speak of. I think for what you paid for on draft day, which was virtually nothing, you're getting a huge bargain. And you're getting way more than your money's worth. So you kind of just ride it out and use him as you've been using him. Because I think, as Brett mentioned, I think he's a pretty safe bet to reach 30 steals on the season. You're just not going to come with a whole lot of anything else, especially once Napoli is back from injury, especially when, and Gallo is forced into the outfield. So Carlos Gomez comes back. I think there's going to be a number of guys, and if the Rangers feel like they want to try to compete this year, and, you know, with Yu Darvish being a free agent at the end of this year, they might decide that this is the only time for them to try to compete given their current roster construction. They may add guys via trade at the deadline, and that would further complicate his playing time. So I don't think it's going to necessarily get any better. For me, he's just a speed-only guy in deeper formats. All right, let's move on and talk about Gio Gonzalez, who's been pitching fairly well as of late. Mike, what are your thoughts on Gio Gonzalez?
I can't stand Gio Gonzalez. Like, I just can't. You watch him pitch, and he's the most frustrating dude to watch pitch because his mechanics forever have always been erratic. He is very inconsistent. He's just inconsistent. That's what he is. Although, you know, based on the HQ grading scale of starts, he's been fairly consistent this year, which is kind of weird. But, you know, he has a solid strikeout per nine throughout his whole entire career, yet he has a below average swinging strike rate this year. He's actually gotten worse at getting the ball over the plate on the first pitch, and his walk rate is, you know, paying the consequences of that. So I think that as the season goes on, that left on base or strand rate is going to go down, which is going to obviously affect his ERA, and his walk rate is going to remain high. I'm a strong sell on Gio Gonzalez if people are buying him, because I just honestly don't have a real good gauge of temperature in the fantasy community of how people feel about him, but I can't stand him. So if for some reason I had him and somebody was willing to, you know, buy him from me for really anything, I would give him up, because I think that he's a train wreck waiting to happen.
Brett, what are your thoughts on Gonzalez?
Yeah, he's just not interesting. He's the same guy that he was before, in that, you know, he kind of had this little dip of where he didn't walk as many guys. He's back to being, you know, someone who can contend for the league lead in walks, while he's still giving up, you know, the same number of home runs that he was giving up. So, you know, someone who is walking guys and giving up home runs is eventually going to run into a buzzsaw somewhere, and it's not a matter of if he runs into it; it's a matter of when. And I don't want to be the I don't want to be the guy holding the bag when it happens. But you know, I think he's a just what he usually is, a back end starter in sort of in you know non super shallow mixed leagues.
Matt, you agree with these guys?
Yeah, I got nothing really to add. I just want to say his strikeout rate is at a 5-year low, and his walk rate's at a 5-year high. And I kind of think he's a ticking time bomb, to be honest with you. He's outpitching his peripherals by a run and a half. So I don't hate him like Mike does. I think Mike physically hates Gio Gonzalez, but I don't. I don't know if I hate him, but I dislike him. And if I don't have him anywhere. He's one of the guys I typically try to avoid because I played a lot of quality start formats, and with his inability to throw consistent strikes and stuff, he doesn't really help you in a lot of formats like that. If I had him, I'd be selling him. But again, my opinion might be a little skewed on that. But like I said, I think he's got some blowups that are going to happen soon with him, and I just don't want to be holding the bag when that happens. So.
Yeah, in his last four starts, he's not given up a home run. And I think that is kind of there's going to be some regression coming. Obviously, I know he faced the Dodgers, and I know he faced the Giants, two teams that struggle against left-handed pitching in those four matchups. I don't know off the top of my head how Seattle. I believe Seattle struggles against left-handed pitching as well, and I don't know how Texas does. So, I think it's just a nice little run. If you were able to capitalize on it by streaming him, then more power to you, but not necessarily a guy that I'd be counting on for the long haul. All right, we're going to move through these next two guys quickly and then wrap it up because unfortunately I've got to get a little bit of sleep before I go to work tonight. So let's talk about Francisco Lindor, who was a top 2-round draft pick in most leagues this year, has been struggling a little bit as of late. Brett, any worry on Francisco Lindor?
Worry? Not really. I think he's going to return value regardless. But you know, I think we're clearly seeing a very different Lindor, which is interesting because you know we hear a lot of people talk about sort of the sluggers that move towards the more you know fly ball launch angle approach and angle. Lindor's gone from having a pretty consistent 28% fly ball rate to having 44% fly ball rate this year. So it's not that he's become a more prolific power hitter when he hits the ball in the air. He's just doing it a lot more often. It's going to affect his batting average, you know, and as when he's this hitter, he's probably more of a 270, 280 hitter than a 300 plus hitter, which I think he could have continued to be in his old batted ball profile. But the biggest thing with Lindor, I guess, is the speed. I mean, he stole 19 bases last year. He's at 3 right now. He might at this pace, he won't even get to double digits. Even though the strikeout rate is still really solid, I think there's the opportunity for him to kind of make himself a very different fantasy player than we thought while not being that much less valuable overall.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Francisco Lindor?
Yeah, it's very weird, his profile changing, because he's been a guy that's been double digit in stolen bases and home runs the last 2 years, which have been really the nucleus of his value. Cleveland was top 6 in stolen base attempts per game last year. Mind you, they had Roger Davis on their team, so that could have been part of it too. But now this season, they're 19th. I do think that Lindor is going to end up hitting more than 20 home runs. I mean, I think it's inevitable at this point since he has 12 now. I mean, if I were to tell you that he has a higher barrel percentage than the likes of Eric Thames, Robinson Cano, Nolan Arenado, E5, I mean, I would be pretty shocked. So, I mean, I think that he's, you know, going to be a guy that hits, what, 20 to 23 or 24 home runs. I can't put him at 25. That's like a different marker, right? So I'd say like 20, 22 home runs. for the season, which nets him about 10 the rest of the way. I am interested to see if he steals more bases, though, because if he's going to be used in more of a run producing, as a, more of a run producing asset, as opposed to, you know, getting on base and stealing, then that's kind of a problem. He's never been one to walk at a high, high rate, but he's remained consistent there. But I think that overall he's going to end up, you know, providing value just in a different way than we expected coming into the year. I never was high on him coming into the season just because I didn't think that he was going to be somebody that would hit for an absorbent amount of power. But the fact that he's actually not stealing at all makes his value even worse for me, which is not a good sign for where I'm going to value Lindor moving forward.
Matt, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, the thing with the profile of change is interesting to me. I mean, he's played 59 games this year, and I just went back and looked. In his last 20 games, anyone want to care to guess how many stolen bases he's attempted?
One.
One. And one is exactly the answer. And I think that's obviously not what you paid for. But like Brett said, he's still being productive, but it's just a different manner. But I don't think anybody would have predicted him at 23 years old to essentially, I don't want to say stop running, because he's still going to chip in probably 8 or 9 stolen bases this year. But I mean, you paid for the 20 stolen base upside. I mean, he had 19 last year. You paid for the upside of 20 steals, and you're only getting not even half that. But he is providing more power than he ever has. And, like, he's a good stat with the barrels, too, the barrel percentage. I mean, he's evolved as a hitter. I think he's hitting third in that lineup every day, which maybe it's just a point of not running in front of E5 and not running in front of Carlos Santana and guys like that. Because Cleveland is still running. I mean, Bradley Zimmer has a fair number of stolen bases since he got called up. So it's not an organizational thing. Maybe it's just Lindor. I know Matt Carpenter does this. Matt Carpenter kind of adapts to the spot in the batting order that he hits, which I can't stand that. And I, you're hitting in that spot in the order because of the type of hitter you are, right? So that you don't really need to adapt your game around that. But I think maybe there's a little bit of that here. I mean, I don't think he's hurt. I don't think there's anything to do with that. You're expected at draft price for Lindor to expected higher than a 260 average and 3 steals in the middle of June. But here we are. He's got there, added 12 home runs. Like you said, I don't think he hits 25. I just think it's kind of a disappointing development for dynasty owners, because I think you need the steals, because, you know, they're the gold standard for fantasy is now the stolen bases, which is so rare. But he's still being productive, so you can't be that mad at the guy for the season he's put up this year. But it's just weird. It's something we didn't see coming, and I wish we knew more about this before, because I don't think he would have been drafted as high as he was.
Guess where he ranks at shortstop among all on the ESPN Player Rater.
I'm going to guess it's top 5.
No, he's 23rd.
12th. I mean, he's behind Tim Beckham.
Yeah,
Andrew Simmons, you know, like,
because he doesn't have the stolen bases propping up his value.
I guess for the rest of the season, would you guys rather have Francisco Lindor or Xander Bogaerts? And is it close?
It's Bogaerts for me, but I feel safer about the outcome.
Yeah, I'm going Bogaerts too. But I think the better argument is Chris Owings. Like, Chris Owings has 7 home runs and 9 stolen bases, and I would rather have him, because I don't think that the power is going to be so much more for Lindor. And obviously Owings is probably going to end up stealing, you know, 25 bases or so. I would rather have Owings. And that's something, like, prior to the draft starting, that, you know, was a landslide in favor of Lindor. I mean, it's just, I think it more goes to show, like, last year I was on VR, he ended up stunting out. This year I was on Owings, and he's going to end up, you know, being higher than somebody like Lindor as well. I mean, I think it's just the moral of the story is grab shortstop late and look for speed.
Yeah, I'm gonna, and I can't believe I'm being forced into going to bat for Francisco Lindor, because I don't think anybody on our side, at least, was more down on him the last 2 years coming into drafts than I was, because he just didn't necessarily offer the skill set I'm usually going for that early in a draft, but. And of course, now I've lost the numbers I was looking at. Over the course of the month of May, he had a much, and over the course of the season as well, he had a much lower than average BABIP, and it's absolutely cratered in June. I think he's getting a little bit unlucky. It's really hard to steal bases if you're not getting on first, and he's just not getting on first base as often as as he has in the past, and I think a little bit of that is unluckiness. I think the steals are coming, and I think he will make adjustments, and maybe we start seeing a guy who, now that he's struggling a little bit and he's not making the power stroke that he was early on in the season when he hit 7 home runs in the month of April, maybe he readjusts his back to his original profile, and this is a guy that we see hit for a little bit better average in the second half and gain those steals back. So I'd be actively going out and trying to buy Francisco Lindor at this point. Let's talk about Steven Matz, and then we're going to wrap up. Steven Matz came back from injury this last weekend, had his first start of the season, 7 innings pitched, a pretty nice debut. Brett, are you buying Steven Matz rest of the way?
I wish I was, but I'm not. And it's not a question of talent with him. I have no confidence that he will be able to stay healthy. And whether it materializes in more missed time or poor performance at some point, with all of the pitching injuries that have gone on this year, I would rather take someone who I felt more comfortable, whose elbow was not going to explode. That said, when he's on the mound, I think he's pretty much an automatic starter in any league. I think you use him regardless of matchup, and you just keep your fingers crossed that he doesn't go on the DL. But I wouldn't value him as a top, you know, 40 starter at this point.
Matt, would you value him as a top 40 starter?
I don't think you can. I think with a lot of uncertainty out there with the pitchers and you know, his elbow is still, I don't really think the injury ever got corrected. I think they just kind of rested him and kind of threw him back out there. So I think the thing with Matz is that there's many more guys that are more stable, guys that are going to give you more durable guys, I should say. And I just, you can't label him as that. I think in a redraft league, I might take a shot just because there's not going to be nearly as much invested in him. And it's probably not the time to buy, though, because the guy's been waiting on him all year and finally comes back and has a good start, although I am concerned about the lack of swing and miss in the first offering. But it's only the first start, so we'll see how he does after that. But if you're waiting for like a 5, 6, 7 start sample for Steven Matz, you might be too late because he might be hurt by then again, unfortunately. So I think the thing with him is it's kind of like essentially rolling the dice, and it's not one I'm really comfortable doing if I'm giving up any piece of substantial value, which you kind of have to because of the true talent. So I guess by default I'm out on Matz. I wish I wasn't, but I would. I guess I kind of have to be.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Steven Matz?
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I can rest easy at night knowing that the Mets aren't reckless at all with their starting pitchers. I thought you would get a kick out of that, Brent. I don't know.
It's
it's been
there
fun,
is
I'm
humor
sure.
in it somewhere.
He's,
but
he's
it's,
laughing
it,
and crying
it's
at
hard
the same
to see
time.
The forest through the trees sometimes.
Well, I'm a Rays fan. It doesn't get more miserable than that, so I'll be right there with you. But
I'm a Giants. Oh wait, sorry.
Oh yeah, sorry. Oh, all of our World Championships. Anyway, yeah. I'm completely opposite with Matt. So I like that we've had a lot of disagreement on the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm looking at this from a redraft perspective, not from a keeper dynasty way or anything like that. But when you're looking at, you know, the ESPN player rater, for instance, and the 31st starting pitcher on the board is Ariel Miranda, and he has a 3.67 ERA. I feel comfortable, not comfortable with the long-term outlook on Matz. Like, he's, you know, he could be injured tomorrow and no way it would be shots. But if you've waited on him this long, you got him in drafts as a, you know, I think he was a top 50 starter in drafts. I would have to look it up, but somewhere around there. And if you've waited this long, then he was the 47th starter. If you waited this long, then you definitely have to ride it out. And I think that on a per start basis, especially if he can kind of, you know, over the next few starts, kind of get a little bit of a groove to him. And I mean, he's not going to get healthier, but if he can kind of you know, get his legs underneath him a bit. I think that on a per start basis, he can be a top 30 starter easy. And he's always had a really strong ground ball rate. He's always been really good at striking out hitters. He's had, you know, 8.6 strikeout per nine or better the last 2 years. Really good swing and miss, first pitch strike rate, all that, all the underlying metrics are consistent with a guy that can be a top 30 starter. And I think that's what I'm willing to bet on the rest of the way on a per start basis. Again, that's a long leap based on his injury track record and his history. We're definitely going to see a time where he's out for 18 months or something, and that's going to be unfortunate. But in the meantime, I really like Matt's. He was a target of mine coming into this year, and that was prior to the injury news. But I knew that risk was there, but I'm still willing to absorb that because I think on a per start basis, he can be a top 30-ish guy, and I think that's where he's going to sit.
All right, I'm pretty sure I'm reading this right, but I could be wrong, or maybe it's just a mistake on FanGraphs. He didn't throw a single slider in his first start. Is that concerning to anybody?
Extremely concerning.
Yeah. I'm raising my hand right now.
Is that true, Brett? You probably watched it. Did he not throw a slider?
You know, I missed a chunk of his start, but I will tell you in a second.
According to Unlean, unless it's getting mixed up as a different pitch, according to FanGraphs, he didn't throw a single slider in his debut.
So, no, he threw 22 curveballs, 10 changeups, 66 fastballs, zero sliders.
That's telling.
And so that to me is the scary part. So, I mean, you know, he didn't get many strikeouts. I mean, yes, the first strike. He was throwing his first pitch for strikes quite a bit in that first start. He was also going up against a Braves lineup without Freddie Freeman, and refused to throw a slider against them. So, I mean, I'm definitely watching the next start or two to see if maybe that was just a game plan for that matchup, or whether he's afraid to throw that pitch. Because if he's afraid to throw that pitch, I think like Brett mentioned with Gerrit Cole. And in his rebuttal to me about him, you know, not necessarily being hurt, is you would see a guy like him go away from a pitch like a slider if he was hurt. And if Steven Matz is refusing to throw it, I think that is pretty telling to me.
Yeah.
Some people don't like to be pessimistic, Justin.
Well, it's amazing that we finally found the one episode where you're not pessimistic.
Justin, how are you going to celebrate the Warriors winning the softest championship in professional sports history?
I'm going to celebrate it pretty heavily, only because that means basketball season is over, and I can stop listening to all the Warriors fans that didn't know what a basketball was 10 years ago in the Bay Area.
I live in Chicago, so I feel you on that, bro.
Yeah, I mean, they can go back to being non-existent and go put on their Sharks jerseys or something. So. you could tell I'm not a Warriors fan, but anyways, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Brett, thank you for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Definitely. Let people know where you can reach on social media, and then give yourself some plugs about your work.
Sure. You can reach me on Twitter at Brett Sayer BP. You can check out the other podcasts that I generally frequent. There's Flags Fly Forever with Mike Gianella and George Bissell, and there is No Off Season with Craig Goldstein and Ben Carsley, both over at BP. Other than that, I'll have my top 40 dynasty list for this draft class from the one we were briefly mentioning before, coming out later this week, and lots of other great stuff from the BP Fantasy team as the season goes on.
Nice. Matt, where can we reach? What are you working on?
MB Tomp, FWFB, and I can also have – I'll have my my dynasty list for this upcoming draft out, and it should be tomorrow if all goes to plan. So look for that up on the site. Kind of touched on this earlier. It's not – in my opinion, I should say, and I can't speak for everybody, but it's not a very exciting draft, in my opinion. A lot of college first baseman, and that doesn't do anything for me. So, but yeah, just hit me up on there. I'll have my NL East notes out pretty soon, and yeah, hit me up, talk some ball.
Mike, where could you reach? What are you working on?
You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Check out the Prospect Show if we ever get one out again, because I'm working 70 hours a week and life sucks at the moment, but no, we'll get some out here pretty soon. Check out my daily matchups column on baseballhq.com. And we are doing a contest for the Friends with Fantasy Benefits writers, not us, but the actual writers on our staff. So make sure to go on and read our content, leave a comment, and that's how we're basing the contest. Somebody from our staff will win a nice little cash prize, so help them out.
Yeah, who cares about them? I'm not eligible.
Yeah, I'm not eligible either, so, yeah.
Owner's not eligible. Sorry.
Yeah.
You can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read all my stuff over on Fangraphs, where I write 4 to 5 days a week, on friendsoffantasybenefits.com, where I write whenever I feel like it. And then you can hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network every Thursday from 8 to 10 p.m. for the Tout Wars Hour with Laura Michaels, and that's been a lot of fun, so definitely check me out in all of those locations. And then give us a rate and review. Really helps us out. If it's of the five-star variety, that'll get you entered in to win a free T-shirt from friendsfantasybenefits.com. Gave away one last week to, I believe it was like Frankie, and I'm waiting to hear back from him, but hopefully people are enjoying the content and enjoying the free merchandise we're giving away for those five-star reviews. Football podcast going to be starting here in the next week or two, once we kind of get all our stuff together and get our podcast teams going. So, and then we're going to have to start having some hockey content on the website. So definitely if you're a hockey fan and you've been waiting for some fantasy hockey content and maybe even some fantasy golf content, we've got a couple new writers, Andrew, James, Tom, and a couple of them are hockey fans and golf. I think James is a golf guy. So going to be getting some new content from some new sports on FWFB, so definitely check all that out. All right, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. For Brett, Mike, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.